everybody. Welcome back to Ubaldi Reports. Over the weekend, we saw Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton score big victories. So Hillary Clinton squeaked out a victory at the Nevada primary, and Donald Trump won convincingly, but not as big as everybody thought he was. But he won big in the South Carolina primary. And now tomorrow is the Nevada caucus for the Republicans, and on Saturday is the South Carolina primary for the Democrats. Now, first with the Democratic race in Nevada, or at least the Democratic caucus, Hillary Clinton beat Bernie Sanders about around 5 to 6 points. But still, some of the things that came out of it. One is trust issue. Not as big as New Hampshire, where 95-5, people just do not trust Hillary Clinton. But it was still very sizable, with well over 84% of respondents saying they just do not trust Hillary Clinton. Now, in Nevada, Hillary Clinton had an advantage because she has the establishment wing of the Democratic Party, mainly the whole Democratic National Committee. And she scored a major coup when Senate Minority Leader Harry Reid went to bat for her and called in some favors and got a lot of people, especially the union votes, to allow the casino operators to allow their workers to attend the caucus so they had an opportunity to cast their vote. So the establishment just does not want Bernie Sanders to win. Now, the one thing that Hillary Clinton is going to have a problem with, and a continued problem, is the millennial vote. Anybody above the age of, I would say, 55 to 60 votes for Hillary Clinton. Anybody below that goes to Bernie Sanders. So she has a big hole to climb to get that millennial vote. But now, as the campaign switches back to South Carolina, this is where this firewall of African-American voters who are still prominently supporting Hillary Clinton. Now, in Nevada, African-Americans voted overwhelmingly for Hillary Clinton, with Latino voters or the Hispanic vote just barely over 50% going to Bernie Sanders. But that's still a major shock when in 2008, Hispanic voters did vote overwhelmingly for Hillary Clinton. So we'll have to see, as the race proceeds forward, how this all shakes out. So now the race for the Democratic nomination moves on to South Carolina, which will hold its primary on Saturday. And tomorrow, the Republicans will hold their Nevada caucus. So we'll see how the results go out that. And we'll explain a little bit more as we dissect what happened on Saturday. Now, Saturday for the Republican Party, Donald Trump did win. He won big, but not as big as everyone would have expected. He didn't, I think everybody expected him to get a little bit 5 points higher than he did. But that said, the race went down to Donald Trump was winning with Marco Rubio second. Ted Cruz came in third. Now, this was just kind of a shocker for Ted Cruz, because South Carolina has a big evangelical group, and the evangelicals just didn't vote for him in the manner that he expected to. So right now, Ted Cruz seems to have reached his ceiling. He has support among the evangelicals and the value-added voters, those who strictly want conservative values as their next president. But he doesn't have a diverse group, and he's not really well-liked in the Republican establishment, and he's definitely not well-liked in the Senate, because it's ironic. He hasn't had one sitting senator, Republican senator, supporting his candidacy for president. So we'll have to see as this moves forward. We'll have to see how this pans out tomorrow, because there's going to be a huge Latino vote, and we'll see where that vote goes. Does it go to Donald Trump, Ted Cruz, or Marco Rubio? If Marco Rubio comes in second, he's already got some momentum. He kind of stumbled in New Hampshire, made up for it in South Carolina. So we'll see how he does in the coming caucus tomorrow. And then next Tuesday is Super Tuesday, where about 9 to 10 states will go up. So we'll see, really, we'll flush out the candidates from there. But the biggest news of the day on Saturday, beyond who won and how the candidates did, is Jeb Bush just ended his candidacy. I think he realized that was a state that was tailor-made for him. 80% of the population who are voting support and like President Bush. So his brother campaigned for him, his mother campaigned for him, and he just never got out of the single digits. I just think it's nothing on his candidacy. It's just, I think Bush fatigue came in. I think everybody just wants to, they like him as a person, but it's just time to move on. So he dropped out. Now the question becomes, now that we're whittling the field down, where do those Bush voters go? More than likely, they're probably going to end up with Marco Rubio, but we'll have to see how that goes. The other candidates who are still in the race is John Kasich, the governor of Ohio, and Ben Carson. Both of them were in the single digits. We'll see how this goes. If they don't gain traction, I can't see how they're going to keep going. And because to move over to Super Tuesday, you're going to need money because now you're in 9 to 10 states, so it's going to be difficult for them. Ben Carson, he was leading in the polls prior to the terror attacks in Paris and in San Bernardino, and he just did not have a compelling message. Mainly, a lot of people felt he just didn't quite understand some of the foreign policy issues, and he just couldn't convey that message. But there's our talk that some member, whoever becomes the Republican, wins the presidency, he could be the Health and Human Service Secretary. So we'll have to see how that goes. But you never know how things work out. But still, as we move forward, whether for the Nevada primaries or whether for the South Carolina primary for the Democrats, I just want the media to challenge these individuals. Now, for the Democrats, you have Bernie Sanders and you have Hillary Clinton. And Bernie Sanders is talking about free college, free, you know, a single payer system for healthcare, and a lot of free things. But he hasn't been challenged. How is he going to pay for that? I mean, there were reports he wants to, you know, tax 90%. He's never really said that, but it's going to be above the, at least the 50% rate, and it's going to be substantially high. Now, the Wall Street Journal reported, you know, a few months ago that they tallied up all the proposals that Bernie Sanders wants to make. And you're talking about $18 trillion added over the next 10 years. So the question is, how is that going to be funded and how is that going to affect the U.S. economy? But I really want them to challenge these candidates. Now, President Obama, this month, when the unemployment rate dropped to 4.9, he made it sound like the economy is booming and the Republicans are the ones who have doom and gloom. But he never mentioned the Democrats. The Democrats consistently say how the middle class is being run over. People are being pushed aside by Wall Street. But the Democratic Party has owned the economy since 2009. So good or bad or indifference, they own the economy. And the press needs to challenge them on this one assumption is, if the economy is so bad as you say it is, what would you do different that the President Obama hasn't since you had, so the Democrats control that economy? So again, what would you do different that President Obama hasn't done? And also with the Affordable Care Act, Hillary Clinton keeps mentioning that she wants to expand and make alterations to that to make it better for the American public. But how is she going to do that? What changes would she make considering the Affordable Care Act is not advertised as it says? People's deductibles are going up. People's co-pays are going up. Even Bernie Sanders mentioned there's 29 million people still without health care and probably won't have health care under the Affordable Care Act. So what changes would she make to the Affordable Care Act? And for Bernie Sanders, how would you get the Congress to go along with a single-payer system when you couldn't get it done before? And also needs to be understand that a single-payer system is what the VA has. This is what the veterans have. And we can see how that's working. So they need to be challenged on this. Now we also have issues with foreign affairs. What's going on in the Middle East is going to confound the next president. What vision does the Democratic candidates have for U.S. foreign policy? Do you believe the United States should be more engaged or less engaged? Now, we have been less engaged under the Obama administration. So how would you differentiate yourself from the Obama administration? Now, Hillary Clinton tends to tie herself to the Obama legacy because she wants that Obama coalition, mainly the minority voters, African-Americans. But the question she's never been asked, What would you do differently than a President Obama has? How would you do anything different in the Middle East? Now, she talks about ISIS. We got to defeat ISIS, get the Arab countries on board. Well, right now, the Arab countries don't trust the United States. They don't know if we're going to be there. So they're going to look at outside powers. And they also saw the Iran nuclear deal. They see Iran emboldened and the United States retreating backwards. And what highlighted just even more than the Iran nuclear deal was the Iranian capture of two U.S. patrol boats, and the Iranians videotaped the Americans on their knees, you know, hands behind their back. So that doesn't play too well throughout the Middle East. So how would she do differently than the president? And considering the policies emanated from the Obama administration are her policies, because she was his Secretary of State for the 4 years of his administration. So what would she do differently? Now, for Bernie Sanders, he talks about we need to defeat ISIS, but he never articulated what would he do differently beyond, I didn't vote for the war in Iraq, that was wrong, you did, and then he diverts back to the domestic issues. So what foreign policy vision does Bernie Sanders have, not only for the Middle East, but for Russia, China? And this is what the candidates need to articulate, and we haven't seen that quite yet. Now, on the Republican side, Donald Trump is leading the Republican field. As we move forward, as candidates drop out, I would like to know, and this is what the media needs to really pressure him, what are his policies? Just like I said with the Democrats, what is Donald Trump's policies regarding the economy? He, in one debate, he was challenged, but really hasn't been challenged since, about eminent domain. He believes in eminent domain, where the government can seize private property for use that they deem appropriate. Well, does the American people support that? Do you believe that he should come in and take your property if it's better used, the government decides it's for better use? That's to be seen, but he needs to be asked those questions. No one's really asked his business dealings, even though he filed bankruptcies 4 times, and that's all public knowledge. And now, this wasn't his personal bankruptcy. This is his business bankruptcy. But how many small businesses went bankrupt because who service his corporation? Yeah, bankruptcy gives you a chance to get, you know, kind of put your creditors at bay till you get everything arranged. But what happens to small business? A lot of times small business intermingle their personal and business savings. They can't wait 2 years to get a paycheck so they can pay their creditors off. How many of those small businesses went broke, went out of business, lost everything? I went through this myself. I worked with a major marketing corporation. They overpromised and underdelivered, even though the lawyer said I had a good case, but it was going to cost me more than I was going to get. So I had to just kind of eat what I lost. Donald Trump talks about suing everybody, but this goes into the face of small business who face lawsuits that are far different than a major corporation, and they don't have the resources to fight back. So these are things that need to be challenged. And also, now that we're dealing with ISIS and the problems overseas, how would a Trump administration deal with this? Now, Donald Trump continually says that he was against the Iraq war from day one, but just last week on a Howard Stern's radio show in 2002, right after about the year anniversary of 9/11, he had stated that when Howard Stern asked him, do you support the Iraq war? And he goes, yeah, I guess I'd support it, but we should have solved the problem in the first Gulf War. Well, that's a far different analogy when he said it was wrong, it destabilized it. So, but his answer was, well, I can't remember everything I said. He needs to be challenged on these assumptions, what he would do differently. I'm not, just so for my listeners to understand, I'm not just ripping on Donald Trump, but he is the leading vote getter. He is the leading Republican candidate, and he needs to be held accountable, because if he becomes president, we can't wait till he becomes president. Now, I was interviewed on a radio show, and I said this in a previous podcast, and I looked at all the candidates' foreign policy or how they would deal with terrorism. Everyone had something I could go to on a website Donald Trump did not. On his website, talking about issues, this talks about China trade, the VA, tax reform, Second Amendment, immigration. Everything else, I had to just go by his public policy pronouncements. So it's time the media, now that we're starting to whittle down the candidates on the Republican side, what would he do differently? That's the same thing with Ted Cruz. How would you defeat ISIS, considering Robert Gates, the former Secretary of Defense under George Bush and Barack Obama, said the statements that both Trump and Cruz are making are blowing hot air. It's not based on reality. And they're not thinking what they're saying. They're just espousing thing to appeal to the base. So these are the things we need to know. And that's the same thing with Marco Rubio. He was probably had the best out of the candidates because he talked about Assad, Syria, ISIS, Iraq, Iran, and also the Gulf states. But even he needs to clarify his foreign policy vision, which none of the candidates on both sides of the political aisle are conveying. So these are the things we need to have addressed. And they need to be more specific, especially when it comes to the economy. It's amazing that the Republicans, who we would think would jump on this, haven't done so far. How would they jumpstart the U.S. economy? How would they, what was their tax plan? What was their dealing with healthcare, Dodd-Frank, and some of the other things? And then the biggest thing is, how would they help small business? Small business is middle class America, and they're getting run over by a train, and no one's addressing these concerns. And they just need to address the concerns that ordinary Americans have. That's what's fueling the Trump and Sanders insurgency, because people are frustrated. They see their lives aren't getting better. College students graduate college with mountains of debt, enter an economy where they can't find a job, and the jobs that can be had are typically low-wage jobs. All you need is a high school education. So these are things that the American people are concerned about. These are the things that American people want answers to. And it's time that the media challenge these candidates. Every time I watch the Republican and Democratic debate, it seems like they're more interested in the theatrics than actually the policy. Because I'm just frustrated that when these moderators ask the questions, there's no follow-up. There's no even thought to a follow-up question. So it's time that the candidates are challenged by the media, by pundits, and not just pick and choose who you want to win without challenging your candidate, but you challenge the other person. The American public wants answers. We got a lot of problems. The economy is not getting better. It's sluggishly moving around. The stock market is at 6% low since the beginning of the year, which is all tied to oil prices. Now let's look at that. Oil prices are about $30 a barrel. That's an extra gift to the consumer, but it's not helping the economy because there's other costs. Food costs, healthcare costs have skyrocketed this year. And there's other costs that consumers are feeling. So what would happen if oil prices went up to just $50 a barrel? That's more money out of the consumer's hands, and it's not helping their bottom line. So these are the concerns the American people have. They're tired of theatrics, and it's time that these candidates truly answer these questions and not play footsie with, let's just give them basic answers. No, it's time that we get answers, and it's time the media do its job and start asking these tough questions. But as we move forward with the Ubaldi Reports, we're going to continue analyzing the debates, the candidates, and the issues in this presidential election. Keep continuing listening to Ubaldi Reports. Let me know what you think. Go to my website, Ubaldi Reports. Let me know what you think and what you want to hear and what you want to analyze, and I'll analyze everything that you want. Also, if you get the opportunity, I have a book out called The New Business Brigade. And the premise of the book is why businesses need to hire veterans and the untapped resource they represent. It's a bestseller on Amazon. I'm trying to get it to be a bestseller on the New York Times bestseller list. So buy the book. Let your friends know. Let anybody else know. Let veterans know why businesses need to hire veterans and what the untapped resource they represent. Go to Stitcher. Go to iTunes. Sign up. It's free. Again, let me know what you think. keep continuing to listen to Uvalde Reports, and it's time that we, the people, challenge our political leaders. Thanks for listening to Uvalde Reports, and keep on listening.